going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan. It is Mental Health Awareness Month. KRLD's David Rankin and Kristen Diaz look at the state of mental health, part of our Odyssey Conversation series.
Mental health impacts many people in many different ways. It could range from just not feeling right or being run down to more serious illnesses like bipolar disorder and schizophrenia.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And with that, we're taking a look at what mental health looks like right now. I'm Kristen Diaz.
I'm David Rankin, and this is the State of Mental Health, an Odyssey Conversation.
Drew Robinson spent several years playing in Major League Baseball for the Texas Rangers and the St. Louis Cardinals. Part of that time was spent in the big leagues and in the minors before he tried to take his own life before the 2020 baseball season.
He sat down with Odyssey sports host Mark Willard about his journey and his current role with the San Francisco Giants. He's helping those players with their own mental health challenges.
Just to give our listeners a little bit of a quick background on the day that you experienced trying to take an attempt on your own life and suffered a gunshot wound to your eye. And you and I have discussed this a little bit before. I wonder if you could take our listeners through that process in terms of how soon after this attempt did you start to feel something different in terms of what you wanted to do with your life?
Yeah, I mean, for me, pretty fortunately, not only surviving, but pretty quickly after coming to for my surgeries, I experienced this sense of not having to hide anything anymore. And so that was able to prompt me into accepting the amazing people around my life and the help that was always available to me. And so I felt pretty, I felt pretty lucky to not only come out of it surviving, but to come out of it with a willingness to accept that help. And so for me, it was pretty immediate to where I wanted to kind of mirror or add to things that were being done like in the industry, like Kevin Love, DeMar DeRozan, some other athletes who were open about their journey and their battles at times in hopes to help other people that are following them to maybe start the process a little bit sooner. So for me, it was pretty immediate that I wanted to try to add to the already amazing work that some athletes were doing in the space, and hopefully not have to learn the lesson in the same way that I did.
Well, it's interesting to me that you talk about starting to work with others. I wonder how quickly after this, because I imagine at the beginning, you're thinking a lot about yourself and wanting to live, and how do you get to that spot? So how quickly do you get through that and then get to the point where you want to dedicate the rest of your life to helping others?
Yeah, to be honest, it was the opposite. I felt like maybe it was just subconsciously, I knew that I was going to be able to get the personal help and get myself lean on the people for myself. But for me, I was immediately thinking about how can I help other people, because I just had this very, extreme example of it doesn't matter who you are, what kind of life you're living, these things can happen to anybody. And so because on paper my life shouldn't have led me to doing what I did, I had this very strong wake-up call that if I can experience this, not that my life is perfect or by any means, but if I could be experiencing this, then a lot of people out there could be. So let me try to use this to try to help others who might be relating, even though on paper people might not realize that they are going through something that could be relatable to my story. So for me, to be honest, it was the exact opposite. It was immediately, how can I use this to try to help others not go through what I just went through?
Drew, I have to imagine, and I'm just guessing here, but when something like this happens, I would imagine people go, oh, Drew decided he wanted to live, and so now he's in a better place. But I have to imagine there are all kinds of ups and downs that still, maybe even today, still happen. So just because you had this experience and decided that you do want to live, I have to imagine tons of ups and downs since then. So how hard has the battle been just for you since that day?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, because that is something that is I feel very strongly about, and I think is a really important topic that I talk on whenever talking about my story, my journey. Because yeah, I mean, to be honest, I was one of the people that believed that I was going to be all good. Like, I'm getting the help. I have nothing to lose. I have nothing to hide anymore. So I'm going to be good. And I remember very naively thinking, like, and I even remember saying it out loud to people that I was talking to throughout the process very early on, is like, I'm never going to have a bad day again. If I do, then I'll just think back to how I just survived a near-death experience. A very unlikely thing is going to power me through those hard times, and I'll never struggle again, basically, naively thinking that. But yeah, these last 5 years, been a constant reminder that it's a continuous journey, that it's a healing journey, not a healed journey. So I'm really big on talking about things like that. And even on my 10th anniversary, which I call my Life Appreciation Day now, which was just two weeks ago now, the message that I reflected on and shared publicly was that it is a continuous journey, and it's healing, and that the waves that come with it can sometimes convince me that I am healed, but then at times the waves that during the lulls, I can convince myself that I'm the same person I was on that day. So it is an ebb and flow kind of experience, and it's something that is just a constant reminder that there's always work to be done, but there's always gratitude to be had when doing the process, because just like myself, and I think everybody in the world who hasn't taken things for granted at certain times, and so the waves of anything that comes with life can become overwhelming at times, but the beautiful thing is that we are all resilient, and we've all made it through our worst days of our lives, and we can get through it just the next time it comes to. So yeah, unfortunately, I've gone through phases since my attempt where I've actually fallen into some suicidal ideation again. But ironically, the fruits of my labor from the work that I have been doing has allowed me to get through those times with a sense of patience and understanding that it won't always be this way, because when it comes to feelings and emotions, everything's temporary and it'll come to an end at some point. So long-winded way of saying, yeah, it's a continuous journey.
Well, first of all, happy belated Life Appreciation Day.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, and when you do start to feel poorly again, what do you do now? What tools do you use?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in consistent therapy, even when things aren't going bad, or whenever I'm not struggling. So consistent therapy, journaling, and exercise. That's what I call my trifecta, the three things that I try to do most consistently. But when things really get a little bit more heavy, I really start paying attention to somatic things like my sleep, and really lean on my support system. So I'm a big believer in vulnerability now. So for 27 years, I try to take a level of confidence at all times that was just unrealistic and act like I had all the answers and I'll get through it, everything's fine. But when those times get really heavy, I'll tell my dad, I'll tell my friends that, hey, I really need help, and I know this might sound a little irrational or dramatic, but I'm really having some heavy thoughts now, and can you just hold some space for me to let me get this out, or can you remind me of some of the things that we've gone through together the last 5 years, or just overall life? So I'm really big on community connection, some physical, somatic practices, whether it's working out, moving our body, reflection time alone with my journal, and then some professional resources as well with my therapist, psychiatrist that we meet with almost weekly.
You touched on it there for a moment, because a lot of what you were just saying was you connect direct with certain people. But I do wonder if there are some physical activities that you go directly to in times of struggle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as good at it as I would like to be, or I wish that I could claim. But I really do think that physical work doesn't just have to be working out. Some somatic work, some meditation, just kind of like sitting with space and not letting our mind control us at all times, just letting it just have some time where we just recognize our thoughts and not have to act on it or try to pay attention to it in an overwhelming way. But yeah, I think physical exercise is a huge thing. And my 16-year-old self would probably say that I just try to work out to be good at baseball or try to look a certain way in the mirror. But now I've like completely changed my idea on that it really does get all the endorphins firing. Can't speak from a professional standpoint here, but it's just something that, I don't know the science, but it's just every time I work out, I've never felt worse after a workout. So it's just something that a lot of people can attest to, that we always feel a little bit better about ourselves afterwards. And it's just one piece of the puzzle to create some sustainability and filling our cup in a little bit more neutral way.
Drew, I think this is maybe even the harder one. Like, you're talking a lot about how a person can help themselves. I really wonder about this. How do you help someone else who's in that spot? What are some of the tools you've learned that you can use for helping someone else who's in the middle of a struggle?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a really big believer in just consistent reminders and implementing normal checkups within our normal day-to-day or week-to-week conversations, or however often we meet someone. Just let it be a part of the puzzle, or be a part of the equation. It doesn't need to be this lifestyle change overnight. Like, only thing we talk about is our mental health, but at least having it be a part of the equation and letting the person know that we're always available, or that we'd be willing to help them through and plant the seed that maybe they don't need some support right this second, but because we checked on them a month ago and now yesterday they had a tough day or a tough situation in their life that they would otherwise try to combat alone. Maybe they remember a month ago you opened the door and offered to be an ear for them to talk to. And then within that, I think the biggest thing is not always having to jump to advice. A lot of times we just like to be heard. And so sometimes just holding space and literally just being a listener and not bringing our own personal beliefs or experiences in a relatable way at times, but just letting them know, like, hey, that does sound like a tough time, or that does sound pretty challenging or confusing. Let's get through it together by starting with just hearing it out, and then maybe the next conversation or later in the conversation we go to some advice or some techniques that you can do. But a lot of times, as you know, like, when we're having a hard time or we get cut off on the way to work, all we want to do is just vent it out, just get it out of our body. So sometimes just holding space and being a non-judgmental ear is the strongest first step that you can help with supporting someone through a tough time. Because, again, I don't know the science behind it, but always just feel a little bit lighter after we vent some stuff out or purge some things off our mind, off our chest, and not internalize it so deeply.
No doubt about it. I mean, I'll make an assumption here because I think that this is a fact, right? Like, happiness comes from within, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's your own perspective, but yeah, I think that it's something that definitely is a byproduct of a lot of things that happen internally and routinely and habitually. So it's just another part-time experience that we go through in life. It's not like we just become happy one day and all of a sudden we're happy for the rest of our lives. It's another temporary emotion that we experience at times, a lot of times resulted from something that we did prior to that time.
Drew, you've told me before, if we circle back to that day where you made an attempt on your own life, you've told me that you had the thought that day, wait a minute, I want to live. How quickly did that thought come to you?
Yeah, it was actually the day after. So I attempted around 8 p.m. On April 16th and then was just kind of waiting for the end for about 20 hours. And the next day around 3:45 p.m., I just finally had a moment of, okay, maybe I do want to survive this. Let me try to call for help. And so for me, it was about an 18 to 20 hour process of just kind of understanding that something crazy is happening and I shouldn't be surviving this, but so maybe I should survive or should try to get through this and let me try to call for help myself. And so around 3:50 p.m. the next day, I called 911 and luckily was able to get some amazing medical care and make it through.
Your dedication to consistently sharing your story and your experiences is so admirable, so impressive. And again, we really, really appreciate your time today. Thank you, Drew.
Of course. Thank you for making time for it. Appreciate it.
This has been the State of Mental Health, an Odyssey Conversation.
You can listen to more shows like this one or get your favorite radio station anywhere at any time on the free Odyssey app.
For everyone at Odyssey News, I'm David Rankin.
And I'm Kristen Diaz. Thanks so much for listening to this Odyssey Conversation.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Mental health impacts many people in many different ways. It could range from just not feeling right or being run down to more serious illnesses like bipolar disorder and schizophrenia.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And with that, we're taking a look at what mental health looks like right now. I'm Kristen Diaz.
I'm David Rankin, and this is the State of Mental Health, an Odyssey Conversation. The start of May marks the beginning of Mental Health Awareness Month. But in California, May 1st is also Move Your Body, Calm Your Mind Day.
NFL Hall of Famer Ronnie Lott is an ambassador for the program.
So what is Move Your Body, Calm Your Mind?
Well, Move Your Body, Calm Your Mind is really descriptive of what you just heard. And when you think about move your body, and for all of us, I mean, from day one, you know, from the time that you come out the womb, you're moving, you're doing things. Your body is kind of, you know, creating this opportunity to make sure that you're constantly moving. And I think what's great is that when you find yourself moving, you find yourself active, you find yourself alert, you find yourself doing things and achieving things. And I think, you know, the more that we're able to kind of especially young people, to understand that movement is valuable. And it's valuable because there are things that you don't believe that you can do. And then all of a sudden, if you're on a teeter-totter, and you're on that teeter-totter, and that teeter-totter is kind of helping you with your balance, and you're going, wow, you know, I didn't realize that balance that I have is something that I can perfect, and something that eventually at some point you could stand on a teeter-totter and be able to stand there and be still. And so what does that mean? At some point in your life, you're being still. Some point in your life, you're being able to concentrate, and you're able to move, and you're able to do things and have the confidence to not only be still, but also to have the confidence to understand that you can make a great decision. And so I think what we're trying to get kids to understand, and trying to get kids to get back to moving and being alert, is that in this state, can you imagine that if you started that movement and all of a sudden your workers are more alert, young people are more alert, they're, you know, trying to find ways to solve issues, they're trying to find ways to do certain things. And I think that that's kind of a vibrant society in California, for us to be able to take on this initiative to make sure that we have a vibrant society, especially a young society of kids that are, you know, looking and creating and using their mind to achieve different things. I think that's powerful.
Has the conversation around mental health changed?
Oh, of course. It really has. And I think what's, you know, fascinating to me is that I've been very fortunate to play with, you know, athletes who have had, you know, a lot of different, you know, issues, and their issues are centered around not just playing, but also sometimes it's around the understanding of how to deal with, you know, the mental challenges that they have, and some of the challenges that they have to deal with because of some of the histories that they've had and some of the things that they've gone through. And so I think what's interesting to me is that whether it's a pro athlete or whether it's a kid that's 10 years old, you have moments where you could be afraid. You have moments where your challenge. And what I used to love is that when I had those moments, I remember as a kid, I got really upset. And the reason I got really upset was I felt that I was tagged wrong. And my dad was like, well, wait a minute, you have to get off the field. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, you think you're right, but you're wrong. And so that moment of judgment, that moment of being able to sit there and being punished for it, it was a moment of discipline. It was a moment of understanding. It was a moment for me to be able to sit there and realize, like, no, I thought the referee was wrong, but the referee was right. And so, you know, those judgments, those understandings of how to deal with those kind of emotions and feelings, and those situations happen every day. that we find ourselves every day having to make great decisions, and sometimes we find ourselves making bad decisions. And how do we respond? How do we deal with it? How do we go through the challenges of understanding that the next move could be even better? The next situation could be even better. And so that's why we are trying to take this kind of activity of all of these different athletes and showing people that, hey, every day we're still trying to make great decisions, and we're still trying to find ways to see if we can change the atmosphere of life for ourselves, for our friends. Those are the kind of moments in life that you have, you know, the judgment of understanding all of these different things. And I love the fact that our governor has said, you know, this is important to me. And not only is it important to me, but, you know, I have my wife involved, and she's doing a wonderful job in helping us and guiding us. And I think it's been phenomenal because, again, young people are constantly being challenged every day, especially when they're out of school, especially when they're not in an environment where they have things that are controlled by them. They have to make decisions on the street. I remember a number of times on the street having to make a decision. Should I go in that direction or should I not go in that direction? Should I hang out with that group of guys or should I hang out with that group of people? And my point is that all of those kind of moments are still, you know, we're still impacted by all of those kind of interactions of people. And I think one of the great things that I learned as a military kid, you find yourself realizing that, oh, okay, there are certain things that are good and certain things that are bad. And mentally, you have to be able to understand that even when it goes wrong, you still can get through it. And that part, to me, as I've seen our society and some of the things that we've had to deal with, I mean, imagine as a young person, COVID, and you were dealing with it and you had to go through this, you know, I mean, that in itself is a journey that a lot of people don't want to have, especially if you're 10 years old and you don't really truly understand all of what it means. And so that for all of us has been, you know, something that I'm amazed that we've been able to kind of find our way through it and really do it in a way where it's been helpful. And it's been also a journey that we've had some young people and some people have had to go through it where, you know, there have been consequences and there have been things and they still get over it.
How much has the pandemic affected youth activity with things like after school activities? And has that had an impact on kids?
Yes, it does. And I think it's one of those things that, again, for all of us, as we go through our challenges and as we go through some of the things that says to our brain that, you know what, that's a no-no. And when we have a no-no in life, you know, one of the things is now how do I take the no-no and get over the no-no, and not only get over the no-no, but then to have the confidence to say, you know what, I still can climb the mountain. I still can get there. I still can learn how to spell that word. I really can find a way to be able to make sure that my imagination still is there. And it sees the way that I can conquer and have, you know, a journey of success. And that's what we're asking kids to understand, that, you know, you can still have your journey. I know that for a fact that there are so many young people that are still climbing, that are still, you know, trying to achieve their best. And what's great about that is, you know, for all of us, we're indebted to those young people that have been able to overcome COVID, overcome some of the challenges that they've seen with their health, and they've been able to stay the course. And to me, again, it's another part of our society. It's another part of understanding how to win and lose. And it's another part of understanding that, you know, we will find ways to get better each and every day.
So as a pro, was there ever a moment you realized you had to keep your mind right?
Yeah. And the reason that you find yourself in those situations is, imagine here you are, you know, you go out and you win right away a Super Bowl, and you climb the mountain and you do everything, and you go, wow, this is unbelievable. And you realize that, oh, you mean I can do this? This is, and then to kind of take the other journey the following year and realize that, wait a minute, it's a lot harder than you think. And the point is that it's the other journey, of failure. And what I mean by that is that that part of your life, and that part, you learn even more about who you are and what you want to be. And I think for a lot of young people, that moment of being challenged, that moment of being afraid or in fear, is also something that we have to embrace. And in some way, it's a lesson like that that gets you over the hump and gets you to a point in your life where you feel like I can be Superman. I can be one of those superheroes. And my point about that is, if you do find that in your life early on, just imagine if you are now working for the Air Force, or you're working for, you know, one of our military groups. I would imagine that, which I've learned, is that if I was a part of that community, that journey of success and that journey of saying, wow, I can win and I can be successful, gives me the power to be able to protect this country, to gives me the power to be able to feel that there are certain obligations that I'm going to be have success with. So, yeah, there are things that, you know, your imagination, which we all have, we want that imagination to be a positive experience, because it gives us, you know, those type of dreams and those type of opportunities. Say, you know, no one can stop me. And what I love about that, that's Dorothy, you know, skipping down the yellow brick road. And that's Dorothy saying, hey, you know what? I see the Scarecrow. I see all these people, and I'm helping them, you know, get to where they need to get to.
How can people be part of it?
Yes. And I really think that when you think about that day and coming out to work with us and to be a part of this, one, give yourself an hour. Just give yourself an hour of saying, you know what, here's what I'm going to give to that day. And I'm going to give that because I want to make sure that I'm connected to the community of trying to find ways to make sure that my mind body is there, is present, and I'm giving to my fellow people of California. And what does that mean? It's no different than voting. It's no different than, you know, belonging. It means that you have a responsibility to make sure that you're present. And I think, and I've always said, hey, I'm going to be present in the things that I want to achieve, and I'm going to be present in trying to help our society, and I'm going to be present in trying to make a difference. And I think we're going to have an incredible day trying to make sure the kids are present and understanding how we can motivate them to be even more valuable human beings in our society.
That is Pro Football Hall of Famer Ronnie Lott. This has been the State of Mental Health, and Odyssey Conversation.
You can listen to more shows like this one or get your favorite radio station anywhere at any time on the free Odyssey app.
For everyone at Odyssey News, I'm David Rankin.
And I'm Kristen Diaz. Thanks so much for listening to this Odyssey Conversation.
If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
We host the true crime podcast, Psychopedia.
Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Our next guest here on Better Living is Mr. Derek Avery. Derek Avery is trying to solve a problem. He is the founder of the Sand Branch Coalition, shedding light on the curious case of the water crisis affecting this Dallas County neighborhood the last 151 years. Derek, how are you doing this morning?
I am fantastic. How are y'all doing?
Doing just fine. And again, I'm so glad to have you on the show, because when I found out about Sand Branch, my jaw just dropped. Sand Branch is a community that's probably less than 20 miles away from downtown Dallas. It's in Dallas County, right near Siegelville. And there is no drinkable or bathable or washable water in this community, right?
That's correct. It's amazing that that's happening so close to downtown. It's a quick drive and they do not have clean drinking water.
Okay, so let's talk about what they're doing to try to solve this, what they've been doing for a few decades now, which is every Saturday at the church, they have people bring bottled water?
So the wells were contaminated long ago, mm-hmm. and some of the wells started drying up. And so some of the residents were still drinking the water, but some of the residents started getting sick. And so they realized they had it tested and they realized the water had been contaminated for a long time. So, yes, now for their potable water, there are water deliveries every single Saturday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. at right off of Beltline at the Wayside Baptist Church.
This is an amazing story. And again, we want to talk about you a little bit more as well. But you mentioned those wells. Again, they don't have, you know, typical sanitation or the pipes and the water, sewage pipes and those kind of things to help bring in the fresh water. They have wells, and those wells became contaminated in the 1980s. And the people in the area said, well, it's because of that water plant over there. And I could go on and on and on, which we will. But I want to know, when did you find out about it?
So it's interesting. I found out about it when I first moved to Dallas, maybe 2 years in. So around 2016 mm-hmm. or 2015, actually, is when I found out about it. And I went out there and I didn't understand how it was so close to downtown, so close to, you know, water. I mean, the closest water line is 400 feet away. And so I just started doing more research, because down there you have to know somebody. Mm-hmm. You can't just go down there and start helping. And so I finally did some research and then decided to volunteer over at Wayside a couple of years ago with Pastor Alexander over there. And it was just baffling to me. And I didn't realize until then that a lot of the folk, most of the folks, they burn their trash, because what people don't realize is when you don't have water, municipal water, you also don't have trash collection.
Mm-hmm.
So they're burning trash. And so I just started volunteering, and I told them that, hey, we can fix this. And so I made a couple of calls, and then I realized that from a political standpoint, there was nobody jumping in the front of the line to lead it. So I sent an email to the Office of Environmental Justice, mm-hmm. the Federal Office of Environmental Justice, and I copied in a reporter and I copied in a few elected officials, and voila, a community meeting was called. And then I guess you would say, you know, my involvement from there was history, because, you know, I tried to work with one of the organizations there, and, you know, you listen to people and they were upset. They were mm-hmm. just saying we just need water. So I called my civil engineer and I said, hey, let's look at this piece of land, because we can fix this, right?
Mm-hmm.
We took 30 minutes and we mapped out.
Wait. You said it only took 30 minutes? Oh,
yes,
my
sir.
Goodness.
Yes, sir. Because this is, I'm a real estate developer by trade.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we do every day. We put in water lines and sewer lines. And even if it's out somewhere on well, you know, we install septic, because that's what they're on now.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't understand why that this hadn't happened yet. You know, and I'm not a genius. I'm not, you know, the smartest or greatest developer there ever were. I just know what to do. And so I realized that it was just a will issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was an issue of the people there not knowing what to do, because everyone doesn't know what to do as far as development goes. So I understood that. But then from the, there are just so many other people that have this same skill set, but I guess they've never kind of banded together to do it. Because there's been efforts before. Pastor Cahey
mm-hmm.
from Mount Zion did everything that he could until he passed away. And a lot of the momentum was lost when he passed away, but he didn't necessarily have the development skill set either, where you could just look at it and knock it out. But he knew who to call. He knew where to raise sand and all mm-hmm. that good stuff.
This is wild. We're talking with Derek Avery. He's the founder of the Sand Branch Coalition. And this story about Sand Branch is such an amazing story. Let me go ahead and tell the story a little bit, and then I'm asking you some questions about it along the way, because, again, it seems like this is so simple to solve, but they haven't had real water in 151 years. Sand Branch is the poorest unincorporated town in Dallas County. It's in Dallas County. As I mentioned before, it's near Siegelville. It's not 20 miles away from downtown. Dallas, of course, fifth largest market in America, one of the wealthiest cities in the country. And the people who have lived in Sand Branch since 1874 have lived without running water, sewage, trash, or emergency services. They also don't have a city council because it's unincorporated. They don't have city officials. It's part of Dallas County, and it's also considered a food desert. I think the nearest place to get some groceries is about 7 miles away. And I mentioned before that the people who live in Sand Branch, which is in Dallas County, they feel like it's this wastewater treatment plant that's not that far away. You mentioned it's only feet away from the housing there. It was built in 1964, and the treatment process, they have this sludge that's buried through 3,000 acres of property using disposal fields. The fields are surrounded by large ponds that collect soil runoff from rainstorms, which cradle the town's borders. The crazy part about it is, without the running water, the people who live in Sand Branch, they're forced to live off the well water for personal use and for their livestock. The crazy thing about it is, like you said, the well water is now poison. In fact, it was tested by Texas A&M scientists in 2016, and they found that well water was highly contaminated and unsafe for drinking or cooking, and even bathing, due to the high concentrations of toxicity. And again, the residents, they blame the plant. We don't know that for a fact, but that's what they blame. And the other part about it, this is goes into the red tape that you're dealing with the politics. I think it was in 1989, Dallas County, citing FEMA, designated Sand Branch as a flood zone and initiated a no construction rule for the residents there. Also including, that also includes, you can't improve existing structures. As a result, the housing is dilapidated and crumbling. The only other option is to rebuild or to leave, which is what Dallas County says everybody needs to do. They just need to leave. And I think they're thinking that because the population of Sand Branch is now older. They're a lot older. I think the average age is around 68. And everybody over there is living under the poverty line or just at it. And the thing that's so crazy is they've designated it as a flood zone. I looked this up, Derek. Since Sand Branch was founded 151 years ago, they have never, there's been no records of flooding in Sand Branch. None.
That is correct.
And this is blowing my mind because you can tell I've done some homework. I Googled it up. Yes. I said, let me just do a Google search. I Googled it up. There were articles written about this in the Dallas Morning News, the Dallas Observer, all kinds of different articles written around the country, around the United States about, wow, this unincorporated town in Dallas County, less than 20 miles away from downtown, cannot get water to bathe, cook, feed it to, or give it to their farm animals, and they can't drink it for sure. And like I said, this is an amazing story. I only found out about it because the Dallas Mavericks were doing this event called The Huddle. Sean Reed puts together this huddle along with Katie Edwards with the Dallas Mavericks Foundation. So I'm there, and you're on the stage, and the Dallas Mavericks actually put together a 15-minute documentary, a very moving documentary about Sand Branch. And I was like, oh, my God. So that's why I had to talk to you. I had to make sure that the people know about what's going on with this thing. So the word is kind of out there, but no one has really budged. Can you talk about this floodplain thing and the fact that you can solve it, but there's just red tape and rules and laws and quote unquote politics? Can you talk about that a little bit?
I can. It's what's interesting to me is I spent a little time on the phone with FEMA, maybe about 15 minutes at the most, because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing anything I'm originally from Houston, Texas. The whole city dang near is in a floodplain.
Hold on. I'm glad you said that because I was going to bring that up. I found out Rita? What was the hurricane that didn't quite happen, but it just turned into rain for like a month or two? Was it Rita?
It was Rita.
Okay,
yes, sir.
So, and J.J. Watt raised all this money, and I realized Houston was built on a floodplain. And that's
correct.
Why it floods, and even though it wasn't a hurricane, it was worse.
Right. It was much worse because you had rain just settling over the city for a long period of time, but they never stopped building in Houston.
Yeah, it's just sprawling on this floodplain, and it will flood there's nothing you can do. The city is already, you know, one of the top three most populated cities in the United States, and nobody's leaving Houston. It's just on a floodplain. But Sand Branch is not, but it's designated as a floodplain.
So Sand Branch is designated as a floodplain, but it has never flooded. And with that being said, it's interesting because a lot of times floodplain maps were used to displace residents. I'm not accusing anyone or saying anything like that. I'm just saying that it is interesting that it has never flooded.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me be the Mr. Conspiracy Theory. My conspiracy theory, based on just what you said and what I've read up, are you saying that they just wanted people to move?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, that's been quoted by some of the representatives for that area that the people should just move.
Okay, so let me get this straight. There's around 100 people that live there, but there's over 200 families in that area, not just in the quote unquote unincorporated town of Sand Branch that get the that have to have this water that people bring in and donate the bottled water to the church, right?
Yes, sir. We serve over 250, almost 300 families every weekend. So, of course, if you subtract some of the people that may come from surrounding areas,
mm-hmm.
those are folks mainly in Sand Branch. And that's why when they say that the population, because some folks have said the population is 38, it's not true. The population is at least 88 to 100 that we know of. And some of those folks don't actually come get the water because they kind of stay inside.
Right.
And when you think about them saying that you can't build there, you can't do these things, it's just not true. It's, they don't want them to. They'll send, you know, the marshals out, or they'll send the sheriffs out. You know, there's a lady there that has a roof that needs to be replaced, but she's scared to do it because she's scared they'll make her tear it down.
Oh my goodness.
Mm. And my stance on that, and I know for me, when for me, doing the right thing is always the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to replace her roof because there should be no reason that they're not allowed to get a permit. Because when you're in an unincorporated area, you don't have a city government, like you said, so you're under the jurisdiction of the county.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'd love for someone to try to get a permit from the county when, you know, it's that people don't necessarily want you to be there. They just want you to move. And so for me, the people were there before the plant. The people were there before folks wanted people to move. So I don't think it's right that we do that. And so that's why we stuck our, feet in the sand on this issue. And we said we're going to keep our feet on the gas until we bring permanent water and permanent sewer and revitalization to Sand Branch. And I always want to make this distinction. My for-profit company is not going to make money off of Sand Branch. We're not going to build there.
Mm-hmm.
This is strictly Derek Avery and the Water for Sand Branch Coalition. Other folks may build later, but it's going to have a tax incremental financing zone around it so that we freeze the taxes
mm-hmm.
of the legacy residents so they're not displaced. And so we've really thought it through. And this is the embodiment of revitalization without gentrification. And that's what we want Sand Branch to be, thriving like it was when their wells weren't contaminated, when there were over 400 families there. That's why we're doing what we're doing. And that's why we're not afraid to have some of those public battles, because this is wrong. There's no gray area here.
Yeah.
You can't have people who, and this is a historic freedman's town.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have an area that was inhabited and founded by people who were freed from slavery, and now you're telling them just to leave their ancestral land. That's not right. There's no argument between that. There's no political gray area. This is right versus wrong. If people's water is contaminated and it's their home, they shouldn't be forced to leave. And it shouldn't have taken 40 years for someone to step up. I'm grateful that, you know, I've been blessed with the know-how and with the right attitude,
mm-hmm.
the patience.
I know what you're saying, because sometimes it's just nonsense. It makes no sense at all. It's like, wait a minute, this is just the right thing to do for, you know, this community. And you're like, well, wait a minute, this doesn't logically make sense. So why are you fighting this? You know, why?
Right.
Why fighting doing the right thing? And by the way, we got, this is Derek Avery. He is the founder of the Sand Branch Coalition. And Better Living is a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. And the thing I love about what you're doing, and how many years have you been working on this now?
We're just about to hit 2.
Okay.
So we haven't been doing it very long.
Exactly. But somebody's doing it. And this is how you affect positive change. What I love about you is that you have solutions, and you've been patient enough to go through the processes, as opposed to just saying, well, there's a problem, We don't know what to do about it, though. It doesn't make any sense. You're like, I've got some solutions. And I heard you give the example of how this same idea that you and the people you are working with came up with has been used in North Texas before. In fact, you mentioned an area near DFW Airport. Can you talk about the comp and how you said, well, we can get this done?
Yes, we can. We absolutely can get it done. There's a neighborhood called Kleberg that was annexed by the city of Dallas years ago that would have had the same issue, but they were annexed and Sand Branch was not. And one of the misconceptions that I always like to clear up for people, because this is something that someone told me I doubt that they'd been to Sand Branch, or if they'd been down there maybe once or twice to, you know, donate, which is fine. But we're down there working. But they were like, hey, be careful down there because those people don't want water. And that's what people are telling other people. And I always say, you know,
who doesn't want water?
Correct. And I always clarified. I said this in a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I said there was one person who said she didn't want a water bill because she had lived this long without it.
I got you. She had well water. I got you. I know what you're saying. You're saying a water bill, which is completely different than water. And since when she had the well, she wasn't paying a water bill because it wasn't a city service. So you're offering a solution where there can be no water bill or a low water bill. Because I read your plan. Could you explain it to everybody again? Because I like the way your solution is. And it's not even that expensive overall. We'll talk about the price in a little bit.
Right. So one of the things that we want to do, because whenever you're righting a wrong, you have to handle the time that it was wrong. So for us, we don't want the legacy residents to have a water bill for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the folks are on fixed incomes. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be doing some workforce development, some things out there to help them even bring in some income as well over that time, because we don't believe in creating a new bill for people if they can't afford it.
Oh, and by the way, let me say this, Derek, because I've seen in different cities around the country, including Dallas, they will do something similar to lure business to those areas. In other words, they'll have a lower tax break. They call it tax breaks. They'll have some kind of tax break where you don't.
A tax abatement. Yes,
thank
sir.
You. The abatement. So to me, it's no different. It's not like this is unheard of.
Correct. We're using strategies and tools that are already in our toolbox. We typically just only use them for the wealthy. In this case, we're using this to solve a problem that to me is a black eye for Dallas County. Because this could have been solved. We've wasted more money on bad decisions than it costs to fix this problem.
That is
and
true.
And so now we're just not letting it go. And we've put together the solution to do so.
Okay, so let's go back to the solution again. You figured out how to get around the floodplain issue and talk about how you were... You were coming up with the ideas of the water pipes and the sewage pipes and those kind of things. And, and the price tag is not outrageous, especially when you consider some of the major corporations that come into the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
And
what they plop down just to get their building started or have I could go on and on and on. I'm in the sports world, so I could go on and on and on about how different colleges nowadays, universities and colleges, they have an NIL fund. And I'm like, this is a drop in the bucket.
A drop.
Compared to what you pay for on your teams, your football, basketball, and baseball teams, and track.
That's correct. I mean, we could band together several organizations to fund this in a couple of months. And that's really the goal, because I want to use this as a unity project that brings people together. We're in a climate right now where we all are mad at each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've brought some of the wealthiest people in Dallas to the poorest area in Dallas County. And one of the things that we've explained is that the floodplain, there's a couple of solutions that we've put together. One, a letter of map revision takes a property out of the floodplain. So the civil engineer that we work with, we're writing a letter of map revision to the Army Corps of Engineers so that we can remove it from the floodplain. Because if it's never flooded and we show evidence that it doesn't need to be in the floodplain, then they can remove it. And so because we're doing that, we like to solve multiple problems at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We like to say, okay, well, even if it's not removed from the floodplain, which we believe it will be, when you dig underground, when you're putting in water pipes or sewer pipes, and you don't recompact the dirt, you only replace it with what was there already, you're not disturbing the floodplain because you have not changed the volume. One thing, and that's not hard to understand. You don't have to have a civil engineering degree. That's a simple thing. If you dig something up and you replace it with the same volume, you have not
altered anything. It's still the same level. Yep.
Correct. And then even if we get technical, if there's a civil engineer listening, we put the pump stations that are needed outside of the floodplain in strategic areas. Because remember, the floodplain doesn't cover 40 feet away because there's a water line right there from the city of Dallas. So we've mapped out the most efficient path right down Beltline to provide water from the Dallas Water Utilities. And that's all that needs to happen to get it out of the floodplain or to make the floodplain irrelevant. So when it's said that it can't be done because it's in a floodplain, that's a lazy excuse. That's because the will to do it isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know sometimes people get a little nervous with my aggressive language in that way, but it is a will issue because it doesn't take very long to look things up now. Like you said, you did a little Google research.
Yeah, I sure did.
That's what happens. And so if people start really digging into it and not just listening to the rumors,
right,
then you'll get actual solutions. And that's why we founded the Coalition, so that we bring organizations that have been working on this for decades together.
Mm-hmm.
And all we're doing is we're the quarterback who won't let it go.
I got you. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense again, because these efforts to bring the running water, I mean, you're talking about putting together like county officials, elected officials, affordable housing developers, people who like to volunteer, people who like to partner with for-profit organizations and nonprofit organizations, because it's just the right thing to do. And that price tag is not that expensive. I already mentioned colleges and universities, how boosters can come up with the money for the NIL or keep kids out of the portal or transfer them over to the portal. What's the figure that you reached? Let me hear this $100 million figure.
I know you would think it's literally 12.5 million total.
Oh, and you've got to be kidding. Wait a minute. I can't even sign a rookie to a contract in the pros for that. What are you talking about?
You cannot.
They'd laugh at me. What? That's all you? I'm a rookie. I deserve more than that. You don't know what I might do. I'm bringing that up because I'm just showing the parallels. I'm just showing you.
I love that analogy, because this is a drop in the bucket. This is a rounding error, as some of my friends like to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because to get the initial phase one, just to have a potable water line from Dallas Water Utilities so people can fill up their tanks with potable water, is only $1.3 million.
Wow.
And if the city waived the $300,000 in fees, it would only be $1 million. And that could be executed within 3 months. That's the thing, too. It's not just the full price tag that's baffling. It's that it won't take that long. Even the construction of the water lines, and that's $8 million total, right?
Mm-hmm.
So $8 million gets water and sewer to that area. The $4.5 million is literally to create a fund so that people can pay water bills. We can help with any tax increases or things like that, and to help you know, any type of assistance with the community, because we want to make sure that what we're putting together is sustainable. We want to make sure that we do not displace people. And that's part of creating the tax incremental financing zone around it, so that it does attract amenities, because you want grocery stores, you want those things there where people drive out of the neighborhood to spend money on. You want those things there, and you want the people who are from there to stay there. But you also want to attract small businesses, and you want to bring people back. I call it the come back home.
Where can anybody find out more information if they want to be involved with Sand Branch, the water crisis situation? In fact, let's just call it what it is, the Sand Branch Coalition. How can they get involved?
Okay, so the official name is the Water for Sand Branch Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And the website is www.waterforsandbranch.org.
I love the way you say it. Hey, Derek, thanks for joining us, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored that you all would take the time to allow me to speak and share my passion for Sand Branch.
And we want to thank everyone for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.